WHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. A truck driver who killed 11 worshipers at a Pittsburgh synagogue in 2018 has been convicted on 63 criminal counts.
The guilty verdicts were never in doubt. The gunman's own lawyers conceded at the beginning of the trial that their client, armed with an AR-15 rifle and other weapons, attacked and killed worshipers at the Tree of Life synagogue.
The verdict here demonstrates a level of accountability that hopefully will make people feel just a little bit better.
Oren Siegel, Vice President of the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism.
When there's accountability for hate and violence, that's always an important message.
Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
3 years after the chokehold death of George Floyd, federal authorities have issued a scathing report on the Minneapolis Police Department.
The Justice Department has found that Minneapolis police have long engaged in a pattern of violating constitutional rights and discriminating against minorities. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
As one city leader told us, quote, these systemic issues didn't just occur on May 25th, 2020. There were instances like that that were being reported by the community long before.
The sweeping two-year civil rights probe concluded that systemic problems in the Minneapolis Police Department made what happened to George Floyd possible. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Daniel Ellsberg has died. He's the U.S. military analyst whose change of heart on the Vietnam War led him in 1971 to leak the classified Pentagon Papers, which revealed U.S. government deception about the war.
I can't regret having done what I knew at the time to be what I ought to do. My duty as a citizen.
Ellsberg was 92. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is visiting China amid rising tensions between the U.S. and China. CBS's Nancy Cordes says the Secretary of State shouldn't expect to be welcomed with open arms.
He's going to be getting a bit of a frosty reception when he arrives in Beijing. In fact, just today, a foreign ministry spokesperson said that the U.S. shouldn't fantasize that it is dealing with China from a position of strength. So this is the kind of belligerent tone that we're hearing from Beijing on the eve of the Blinken visit.
Blinken was originally scheduled to travel to China earlier this year, but the trip was delayed after the U.S. discovered and then shot down a Chinese spy balloon. A deadly tornado flattened parts of Perryton, Texas yesterday, killing at least three people and injuring dozens more. CBS's Omar Villafranca is following.
In Perryton, hospital officials are telling us that the injuries range from broken bones to collapsed lung.
At least two people are missing. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
She's moving to Georgia.
Jada's Podiatry Clinic's top nurse quit, leaving her business toes up.
We've got six procedures and three major surgeries in the next 2 days.
She needs a new RN who can think on their feet.
There's no way I can do all these procedures on my own.
Indeed can help her hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Instant Match instantly connects you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your sponsored job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
I always wanted to learn Spanish, but I never thought I'd have the time. Then I discovered Babbel.
Babbel's lessons are fun. They only take like 10 or 15 minutes, and in 3 weeks, presto, you're starting to speak another language, like magic.
I love that Babbel's lessons aren't just robots talking. They're voiced by native speakers, so you get the pronunciation just right.
If you want to learn a language, there's no faster, easier, better way than
Babbel.
Babbel.
Babbel. Go to Babbel.com to try for free. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Walks, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks today. 855-954-1186.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & GTWLawyers.com.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows around 52. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, southeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 80. Partly cloudy skies again. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 57. Low 80s, Sunday, with a chance for scattered storms. Mid 80s, mainly sunny skies and calm, Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 74.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this June 16th, 2023. 3 o'clock on your dial, and you have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we are going to welcome in our great friend, Rock Larson, from Wood County Veteran Services. Looking forward to talking with Rock. Looking forward to talking with Senator Patrick Teston right now, joins us monthly. Appreciate you joining us, sir.
James, thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm a little bit tired today. We had a late/early morning. We were Joint Finance Committee took action on several budget items last night, and it was a long day of negotiations back and forth, and we were initially set to go in at 6 p.m. and ended up going in at 11 and wrapped up at around 2:30.
Can't imagine all the different conversations and how that went. Looking forward to hearing a little bit more about it. Certainly, we appreciate you guys working into the long nights. Bit of a breaking news overnight. The GOP lawmakers rejected funding for the continuation of child care subsidiary programs. Sir, you and I and every politician that's joined us, one of the main things we've talked about is child care. What is the cause? Why was this done? And what is being done to counter this so that we can take care of child care in the future?
Yeah, this continues to remain a big topic of conversation. And obviously, you know, that was a very contentious discussion point last night, was whether or not to continue the COVID era programs that Governor Evers had using one-time money from the federal government. And unfortunately, this is one of those areas that I think we're going to see more and more of as the timeline to use federal money runs out. And so essentially what's happened is we're creating these fiscal cliffs. Now, the governor had created a program called Child Care Counts, which use one-time money, and there were a lot of discussions as to whether or not there should be continuation of that program. And ultimately, the committee, we decided through our omnibus motion not to continue that program, just with the concerns of the cost to continue. However, there were some important things that were done last night. In fact, we increased eligibility for low-income families to utilize various programs within DCF that help with subsidies for child care. And then also, we put aside within the JFC supplemental account $15 million because a number of our colleagues in both the Senate and the Assembly are working on a package of bills that we think will help better address in a more targeted way increase in access to child care. So while the main headline today is the GOP votes down access to child care using the Child Care Counts program that used one-time federal money, it's not an issue that is going away. And so we're going to continue to work on this issue. And with some of the things that were done last night, I do think it's going to help move the needle. Now, granted, it still remains a big issue, especially as it relates to allowing parents to get back into the workforce. And so I do think you're going to see continued legislative efforts even after this budget is completed.
I imagine you hear from constituents. I know I hear from listeners. This is one of the biggest topics of our lives, figuring this out and getting this right. You're never going to hear anybody say just spend, spend, spend. I don't think anybody's okay with that. But it's understandable, I would think, from your most people out there. You see this net, you wake up this morning, you see that headline, it's going to call your attention and you're going to have some concerns. I encourage people to always read articles. Don't read headlines, read articles and read multiple articles to find out the information that you're going to get. But when it comes right down to just stripping all this away, we still come back to what is going to be done about childcare in this state. Wisconsin is more than half of Wisconsinites live in childcare and a childcare like empty zone. We've got obviously the numbers that we have from the pandemic. You and I have touched on this topic many, many times. So it is one of the most vital things that you and your team over there and you and your colleagues have is figuring this out. I don't want to make it seem like it's, hey, here's the problem, get it done. We got to do this as a society. We got to figure this out. But I would think that this is one of the main talking points anytime you are going to work.
Oh, absolutely. And so, again, there's still going to be legislative efforts that are going to try and address this issue. Because as you referenced, It's true. You know, half of Wisconsin counties are child care deserts where there are lack of providers. And over the last several months, I've had the opportunity to sit down with a number of early childhood educator facilities throughout the 24th Senate District and even some outside my district, and I even spent the day working at one. And, you know, I think we're having conversations with individuals who, and to be frank, kind of realize that the expectations that the continuation of using one-time money from the federal government from the pandemic was likely not going to be a starting point. And so, you know, we're going to continue to sit down and think outside the box as opposed to just throw money at the issue and not actually address the root cause of some of these problems, whether it's trying to increase slots, whether we're trying to attract more individuals into the profession. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I talked to a provider who has two facilities in the Madison area, and his father's actually lives in Wisconsin Rapids area. And we had a really good conversation, and he's been able to have a model that works for him and for his families. Two facilities that have over 200 students enrolled at both locations, and they have an economic model that is actually sustainable. And I'm hoping to continue those conversations with him to see if we can find a way to apply that, because if we can get these facilities and these child care facilities to a point where it's actually attractive for individuals to go into this profession, but more importantly, to retain those professionals, because it is not an easy job. I can tell you from the day I spent at the UWSP child care facility, it gave me a newfound appreciation, as you've got couple dozen toddlers running around creating all types of havoc and what they have to put up with. It's not an easy task. And so I do think there are approaches that we can take to help build the pipeline. And I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues over the course of the next several months as we, one, get past this budget process, but then as we look towards the rest of the legislative calendar to use some of the resources that we set aside within the JFC supplemental account to really try and hone in and find the exact pinch points that will hopefully alleviate some of these areas where we've got some challenges within child care delivery here in the state.
And I understand people have been patient on this subject, but it's not going to be an overnight fix. It's not going to be a one bill solution. It's going to take a lot more work than that, and it's going to take time to get this right. We all got to give each other grace when it comes to that. I want to talk more with you about your UW trip in a moment, but first I was actually going to start our show with this before the breaking news this morning and everything, because you were a part in support of two most really historic bills that are going to invest in education and local government. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, I was really relieved and excited when last Wednesday a deal was struck between legislative leadership in both houses as well as the governor's office that I think you summed up perfectly, historic. This is really generational change as it relates to how we fund local government as well as our education system. So we've all heard over the last, you know, several years, and even before I was in the legislature, the challenges that local units of government were facing with levy limits. And then on top of that, when you throw in 40-year high inflation, a dollar doesn't stretch as far as it did even just 4 or 5 years ago. And so being cognizant of that, discussions have been ongoing for months between legislative leadership and some of my colleagues who spearheaded this, particularly State Representative Tony Kurtz and State Senator Mary Felskowski, and really crafted a deal that I think is going to be a game changer, especially for areas of our state and some of our smaller townships and municipalities, where now they're going to see a 20% increase in shared revenue, which, you know, 20% on face value may not seem like much, but based on how the old formula was written, and in fact, I've got a few townships that are actually going to see a 400%, or in one particular case, nearly a 4,000% increase in shared revenue. So really what this is all about is making sure that we are helping fund core functions of government, things like public safety, police, fire, EMS, making sure that, towns have money for roads and infrastructure. And so this is a big deal. And on top of that, given the county and the city of Milwaukee the tools to help themselves and write their failed pension obligations with the ability to levy an increased sales tax in the city as well as the county. And I want to touch on that real quick, James, if I can, because we've heard some folks say that this is a bailout to Milwaukee, and that's simply not the case. A bailout would imply that we simply gave them a blank check and say, here you go, do with it what you will. Really what this does, it has some guidelines and guardrails put in place so they can right the ship, make sure that their unfunded pension liabilities get fixed, while at the same time maintaining core functions of government, which is public safety, and making sure that they maintain a sufficient level of police and fire as well as detectives, because they've been having a huge crime surge down there for the last several years. And as I've always said, when Milwaukee does well, the state does well. Mm-hmm. And when Milwaukee is not doing well, while we may not necessarily feel it up by us, it does impact us both directly and indirectly. And so along with that, as part of the agreement, were historic changes, not just to how we fund local units of government, but also into our educational system. What I was really excited about with the education side of this deal is that we are going to invest nearly $1 billion new dollars into our K-12 education system, raise up our low revenue districts like we have many here in central Wisconsin, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, Port Edwards, and Nacoosa, just to name a few, and bump them up to $11,000 per pupil, as well as providing an additional $325 per student in each year of the biennium, while at the same time also increasing the opportunities for the choice and charter program. So, you know, parents have the opportunity to have an educational system that works for their sons and daughters. If you would have told me at the start of this session, as these conversations kicked off, that we would get to a point where both Republicans and Democrats would find agreement on both of these huge major issues, I would have told you I wasn't going to hold my breath. But through a lot of give and take, we came up with what I believe is a great compromise, and more importantly, a historic reforms for the state.
Yeah, just to touch on a couple of things you mentioned there, because I've also heard from listeners about this, the Milwaukee situation and some of that. And you touched on it. I think you worded it perfectly. I think of this situation very similar to Illinois money or Minnesota money neighboring state. We complain sometimes about, you know, visitors in the state or fibs or any of these things. But boy, you would miss it if you didn't have those dollars. You need those dollars. We've just recently had the tourism numbers come out and record numbers in tourism dollars here in this state. You need that money. As this state, as Milwaukee, as Madison go, how Wisconsin goes. Whether you like that or not, that is the case. That is a big part of this. Investing in Milwaukee is investing in Nacoosa, investing in Port Edwards, investing in, it's all connected. That bothers me a little bit. And I say miss me with that, because if you care about this state, you got to care about every county, every city in the state. It's all connected. To the point of your mentioning about the not seeing this happening, you know, didn't see this one coming or anything. You're not alone. Neither am I. I ask politicians all the time to own things when things don't go their way or they make a mistake or anything else. And I'm doing the same thing right now. I've gotten on you. I've gotten on Representative Krug and Katrina Shankland and about, wait, why are we not putting more money in our education system? And here we are. We're doing it. So I'm very proud of this. I'm very happy to see it. I also think these bills really are a great show to the rest of the country. This is how a purple state can work. This can work. It doesn't have to be, I bicker at you, you bicker at me, and then we go our separate ways. You can work these things through. I think it's a great example to the rest of the country of, look, we can work together. We can make these things happen. And look what happens when we do. $1 billion in resources to our schools, a raised revenue ceiling. This is the great accomplishments we can do when we work together.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it's just a testament of leadership in both houses, as well as folks within the Evers administration, being able to sit down and recognize that, you know, we've got some challenges and this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And, you know, thankfully we seized the opportunity. It passed on bipartisan votes out of both houses. And now we just await the governor's signature. And so I think it's a great day. It absolutely is, because it's not every day that you can say we're able to increase education funding by over $1 billion. We're able to give more money back to our local communities for key essential services. And what's really incredible as we come down to the final stretch here within the state budget process is that we still have an opportunity to usher in historic tax cuts. And so, as I've said in previous bienniums, we have proven we have the ability that we can make major investments in key areas of government and into our state, and still at the same time provide significant tax relief to our residents here. And that was the other thing, too, that we did this week. We passed a historic transportation budget, nearly $1.55 billion in new investments going into our roads, bridges, and highways. And what I was particularly happy about is, along with the shared revenue package that's going to get signed hopefully this week yet, but within the transportation budget, I think we are able to do a great job of identifying and recognizing that, you know, we still have some challenges as it relates to our roads and highways here in the state. And so, you know, we're providing $100 million in the LRIP program, which is the local road improvement program, where local governments have the ability to apply for grant dollars. And we also created a new program as it relates to agricultural related roads. And that's a $150 million investment, along with providing 2% increases in transportation aids in year one and year two of our budget. We actually have a lower, we're not bonding at a higher rate as we were in previous budgets. And so really what we're trying to do is use the one-time money that we have to buy down debt, not have to borrow as much, and really setting up future legislatures as well as future budgets in a really good position. And, you know, I was given the task of writing the transportation budget for the Senate Republicans. And, you know, when we saw the initial numbers, they weren't pretty. And we were looking at a pretty big deficit in year two of our budget year. And we were able to turn that around and actually leave the transportation fund with a surplus, which was no easy task. And so, again, just another great example of what we've been able to accomplish since we started this budget process. And I'm really excited to see what the final product's going to look like when hopefully we wrap up our work on the Finance Committee next week. And then it'll be off to both chambers and hopefully off to the governor's desk to get his signature.
Speaking with State Senator Patrick Teston right here on Midday Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Sir, you and a Adams County DA, last fall, he brought something to your attention. And I want to spend some time talking about how you and your colleagues are working to strengthen the sexual contact laws in the state.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, a district attorney down in Adams County brought this to our attention earlier in the year, and it's really not a comfortable subject to talk about, but I think it's one that's important, where there was a loophole within the state statutes as it relates to sexual contact. And there was a particular case within our area, I believe it was in Adams County, where an individual committed a heinous act. And, you know, I'll try and be as light about it as I can, but essentially it was an issue where some bodily fluids were excreted onto a paper plate, and this individual made his stepsister touch it. And unfortunately, and as gross as that is and as shameful as that is, as our current statutes are written, it's technically not a crime. And so when we were approached about this, one, my floor was on the ground, because I couldn't believe that this was even allowable or how this individual couldn't be charged. And so we set to work to create legislation and tighten that to make sure that in instances like this and others that, you know, that they can be prosecuted as they rightly should be. And so that bill is working its way through the legislature. It's I believe it's passed out of the assembly. We're waiting for a Senate floor vote, which should be coming up shortly. And again, I know it's had broad bipartisan support, and I think we want to make sure that in special circumstances such as these, we're delivering justice where justice is due.
And appreciate that work. You know, us at the Family Center, being on the board at the Family Center, this is one of those topics in these kind of situations where we're used to dealing with. It means so much to have the support of our legislation, our politicians, the DA's office, all these people bringing attention to these things. It makes the work that the Family Center does a little more easier and a little more maybe a little more support to these things. And I appreciate for you, for are you out there listening, the awkwardness and the uncomfortableness of this. It has to be that way, though. We spent way too long ignoring these topics. I did not have to bring this up to you, sir, but I appreciate you tackling the conversation with me and, more importantly, working with your colleagues to make it so we don't have these gray areas in our laws. We protect the people that cannot speak for themselves. We protect the youth. We protect everybody when it comes to this stuff. Everybody, nobody deserves to be dealing with this, and it's good work that you're doing there on that. Appreciate it. I also wanted to talk to you recently. You were part of a listening session on broadband over at Midstate. Good morning to our friends over at Midstate. Can you tell us a little bit how that went?
I don't know if I was there for that.
You were the PSC and the holding the listening session. Oh, you weren't there for it. I apologize.
No, I was down in Madison.
Okay, but I did want to bring attention to the situation of broadband a little bit and what the PSC is doing with that. The Public Service Commissions of Wisconsin bringing a lot of awareness to the importance of broadband.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is again, I'm a firm believer we're in a day and age where broadband has to be considered as part of our infrastructure. And so, you know, we didn't invest any new state dollars into the broadband expansion grant program when we took up the Public Service Commission, primarily because this is one of the few times where we have providers coming out to us, the individuals who lay cable on the ground, and just they were saying, please pump the brakes a little bit. We don't have the bandwidth, no pun intended, or the capacity right now with all the money that is coming into the state, because we're expected to receive anywhere from $750 to over $1 billion from the broadband or from the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And so what we're doing right now is waiting for those guidelines to come down. And then once they do, figure out how we can implement that into our existing broadband expansion program, because it is critically important that we connect every home in this state as best that we can with high-speed internet, because it's critical for commerce, it's critical for healthcare delivery, it's critical for even education. So, you know, that's one thing that we're going to continue to push and invest in. And to put this in perspective, so over the years, we've made significant investments from the state to broadband expansion grant programs. And even with the investment that we have, the money that we're going to receive from the federal government here in the near future doubles of what we've been able to invest at the state and projects that we've been able to get completed. And so that's one of the reasons we took the approach that we did on the Finance Committee, is because, you know, we don't just want to, again, throw as much money at the wall and then have that money sit there and not get actually utilized. And so I'm hopeful that we'll have hopefully a big announcement here in the near future, and we'll receive some of these federal dollars and continue to build out our network.
You recently spent some time at Camp Randall Stadium, learned a little bit more about UW's athletic program, the facilities. You touched on that a little bit earlier. How did that go, and did you get a scholarship? Did Coach Fickell, you know, he's looking for more people. He's taking that transport portal is open.
Yeah, well, I was joking with the assistant athletic director who gave me the tour, and I said, well, you know, I still have 4 years of eligibility, so if we want to hit the weight room and the coach comes by, maybe I'll get a chance to walk on the season to the Badgers. But
be doing the same thing.
The reason I was there, so a couple budgets ago when I was on the State Building Commission, which is tasked with enumerating all construction projects at the state level, we actually approved the reconstruction of the south end zone. And so they wanted to take me through and see the project now that's being completed. And boy, that was really a cool experience, because, you know, oftentimes when we vote on projects like that, you sometimes get to see, you know, the prints of what they could look like and the great graphics and everything, but to actually walk through it, it was really neat. And what's unique about the UW football program is that it generates 80% of all revenue for all men's and women's sports programs there. So it really is the economic driver for the athletic department. And
the reason they took me through the tour is that while, you know, we renovated the south end zone at Camp Randall, their training facilities and where they practice, it's really kind of in shambles. And so that was one of the projects that got enumerated within the state building projects program in this budget. And what's great about this particular program is that it's all program revenue. So it's generated from sales tickets and things of that nature. And so it's not one of those where the taxpayers are on the hook. And hopefully, you know, that one will stay in once the budget gets signed into law. And, hopefully Bucky's going to have a good year. There's a lot of excitement around Coach Fickell.
Oh, yeah. And some of these recruits he's bringing in. I am very excited. On Wisconsin should be a lot of fun. Sir, we're wrapping up, and as we do, you know how I work. I have to ask hard questions sometimes, so I have to wrap up with a tougher question. It is Dairy Month, and here at the station, we've been doing a poll question asking our audience, you know, what's your favorite dairy product? So here's the tough one. What you get to pick one. What is your favorite dairy product? We've got votes for ice cream, chocolate milk, butter, cheese, frozen custard. You got to vote.
That's a tough one, Jason.
It is, like, yeah.
Who's your favorite child?
But yes, exactly.
If I had to pick one of my favorite dairy products, I got to go with cheese.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Another vote for cheese. That's a good one, sir. Thank you. Thank you for playing along, of course, sir. Senator Teston, always appreciate you joining us. For those new listeners out there, Senator Teston joins us every month, always an open and very transparent conversation that I greatly appreciate, sir. If people do want to ask you their questions, they have stuff that they want to follow up on or anything, is there a way to reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone needs to get in contact with my office, or if you're running into any issues with state government, not that that would ever happen. That's a joke. They can reach out to my office at 608-266-3123. Shoot us an email at sen.teston, T-E-S-T-I-N, at legis.wi.gov. Shoot us an email, give us a call, follow us on social media, and doors always open.
Happy Father's Day, sir. Have a great weekend.
You as well.
We'll talk again soon. State Senator Patrick Teston joining us right there. Thank you for the time. We're going to have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Burgers stacked with mushrooms on Wisconsin Swiss cheese, or piled high with smoked brisket, crispy bacon, Wisconsin Gouda, lettuce, tomato, sweet barbecue sauce, and a fried pickle, or simply topped with cheese and fried onions, Monk's Bar and Grill offers classic and gourmet burgers for lunch, dinner, and game day. Whatever you are craving, Monk's has you covered with 7 locations statewide. Monk's Bar and Grill is ready for your next game day visit and is a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics.
This episode of Eye on Travel is brought to you by Viking, providing all-inclusive voyages on rivers, oceans, and lakes around the world. Designed for curious travelers with interest in science, history, culture, and cuisine. Viking chairman Torsten Hagen often says, Viking offers experiences for the thinking person, with no children and no casinos on board. Learn more at Viking.com. That's Viking.com.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows around 52. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, southeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 80. Partly cloudy skies again. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 57. Low 80s, Sunday, with a chance for scattered storms. Mid 80s, mainly sunny skies and calm, Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 74.
Welcome back to Midday Magazine, everyone. 3:30 on your clock, and you have your host, James J., here behind the microphone. I am going to talk right now with one of our favorite people, Mr. Rock Larson, Wood County Veteran Services Officer. Rock, good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon.
How have you been?
Busy. But always room for more.
Appreciate that. And for the audience to know, this was a bit of a last-second joining of us, so I appreciate you doing that, Rock. Thanks for joining us.
It's nice to pinch hit because I'm passionate about what I do, and you never get the word out enough.
And speaking of which, you and I in our pregame were just touching on this, the toxic exposure and so many of the layers to that. And I want to start right there, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, to give the background, in last August, Congress and then the President signed into law the Staff Sergeant Robinson, blah, 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 blah. Comes down to the PACT Act, which is keeping their promise to address toxic exposures that our service members have been exposed to. And it was actually a whole bunch of bills rolled into one big, not quite omnibus, but just whatever their terminology is in the middle. So it covers things for all the people who serve kind of in the Southwest Asia, Persian Gulf, North Africa. So, there's a whole list of things, and it talks about burn pits and multi-symptom. If you remember back during the first Gulf War in the 90s, veterans were saying, hey, all these weird things happening to us, and we've got Gulf War syndrome, and there wasn't any evidence of that because no one was really fully collecting that data. They were just saying, we don't know what's going on, but it's not due to this because we don't know. But now, 30 years later, there's some data. And there's some stuff going on, and it's not tasted this long, but to put more of it in law, it is now. And part of that law is researching and coming up with I don't want to say milestones or a process that the VA the VA is required to go through and review what they're seeing, and they've got toxic risk exposures, and veterans are, can be seen at the VA just to kind of examine where they exposed and what, and is anything going on, and then to keep tracking that as they go through their VA healthcare.
Right.
So that's part of it for Southwest Asia, and it added all these all these places, and I'm going to try to, you don't really need to remember them, but if you were there type thing. Persian Gulf veterans to include Afghanistan, Israel, Egypt, Turkey, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Oman, Gulf of Oman, the Persian Gulf, the Arabian Sea, the Red Sea, and the airspace above all those. And that's just for the multi-symptom, undiagnosed. It's weird stuff going on, and we can't quite figure out where it's coming from. It's different than, you've got gastrointestinal problems, but it's due to this ulcer. That's diagnosed.
Right.
But you've got something going on. You've got chronic diarrhea or swinging from constipation to diarrhea back and forth. So that's some of those things there. Then it goes in. Some of the symptoms of the multi-symptom are fatigue, unexplained rashes, headaches, muscle pain, joint pain, neurological signs and symptoms, neurophysiological signs or symptoms, symptoms involve upper and lower respiratory, sleep disturbance, gastrointestinal signs or symptoms, cardiovascular signs or symptoms, abnormal weight loss, and menstrual disorders. I mean, these are just some of the, so almost anything. If you got something going on and we can't quite explain it, well, maybe it's service connectable. And by service connectable means it's caused by your service, and the VA is supposed to then compensate you for that disability and kind of how it affects the fact of your ability to work. I mean, if you have constant diarrhea and have to be near a bathroom, that limits what you can do work-wise and things like that. So that's the theory. Then there's the burn pit exposure, which has a whole nother list of places similar. Bahrain, Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, the United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, Djibouti, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, Uzbekistan, and other countries that will be determined by the Secretary of the VA, who incidentally was in Wisconsin last week at a CVSO conference, a national conference that we hosted. But now this burn pit that is not the same as I was in Vietnam. And
right.
I wasn't, but I mean, the veteran says, I was in Vietnam and we used to burn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they're burning then mostly was not the same stuff that they're burning today.
Yeah.
Whether or not that may or may not come in the future, we don't know, but these are two different things.
Uh-huh.
And the presumptive service connections on those are all sorts of types of cancers. I'm not going to list them all, but I mean, there's just a ton.
It would probably take less time to not include them.
To include the ones that aren't included. Pancreatic cancer, which is unfortunately a horrendous illness that usually, by the time you have the symptoms and they figure out what's going on, it's already metastasized and you're screwed.
if I have this right, if it's not number one, it's the number two cause for males when it comes to cancer. It's the most highest death rate.
Because you just can't. Mostly because it doesn't affect something that you become. I got this.
I walk it off. Whatever. That's what we do as guys. Yeah. We walk it off. Yeah.
By the time, this is something. It's already a big something.
Well, and unfortunately, there's also the testing that can be done, and a lot of men are are shy away from that test. They don't want to have the test or whatever. Get the test. Get the test.
So, I think you might be thinking prostate cancer.
I'm thinking of prostate. You're absolutely right. I apologize. But either way, still get the prostate test.
Right.
Yeah.
then they go on to other things like asthma or COPD. Mm-hmm. And these are constrictive bronchiolitis or emphysema, granulomatous disease, which I have to look up every time. And it's some lung-type respiratory blood and I actually have a young lady who that shows up on our medical record, so we're going to be working that with her. By young, I'm old, so lots
yeah,
of people,
no, I hear you.
She might be in her 30s or 40s. I can't remember, but pleuritis, interstellar lung disease, pulmonary fibrosis, chronic sinusitis. I mean, so chronic rhinitis, glioblastomas. So there's a whole bunch of things. Now, it's not just the veteran, unfortunately. It's the surviving spouses. I mean, right when this bill was signed in August, and they're figuring out all the rules and how they're going to do that, and they started January, they were going to start working these things. Mm-hmm. During that time frame, we've had two veterans pass away, both with children in college and high school, and that's just that we know of, and I knew them, and they were on my radar screen, and they're getting benefits now. In fact, education benefits for the two, the surviving spouse. One of them was in just this morning. So if somebody passed away even years ago, that serve there, and they have surviving family members that might be entitled to benefits, we want them to call us.
Yeah.
Incidentally, we're Wood County Veteran, go to Wood County Veterans Office, Google it, Wisconsin CVSO, Google it.
Yeah.
You can find us. We don't hide. We may not call you back right away because if I'm with somebody, I can't really pick up the phone because then I lose track of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so leave a message. It may take a day or two. We will get back to you. So those are the things on the Southwest Asia, that area, since basically 1990 when we went into the Gulf War. Then other things that were included and hugely major, and we haven't seen a lot of activity on this yet, is they finally admitted that, yeah, we used Agent Orange other than just Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
So Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Guam, American Samoa, Johnson Atoll, are ships that put into those places are... They're not looking for me.
No, no, me neither. It's not for me. For once, it's not for me, everybody.
So, I don't know if they...
I don't know if you guys picked up the sirens or not. So, yeah, yeah. But Rock and I are staying here. They're not picking us up.
So they added these locations along with Vietnam and along with the ships that were in the continental waters of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And also, you know, once again, the widows... Mm-hmm. of those veterans may be eligible for benefits if they died, widowers,
right.
Either way,
right.
Type thing. So these are presumptive illnesses. If you were there and you have it, it's presumed you got it from being there.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Saudi Arabian thing. So, and in that they added one disability, hypertension. Mm-hmm. But they've all these other ones that were on the Agent Orange list before. Lots of cancers, type 2 diabetes. Bladder cancer was recently added last year. Hypothyroidism. Ischemic heart disease, which is heart disease that, you know, like coronary artery disease, mm-hmm. if you had a stent put in or if you had a heart attack. It's what limits the... blood flowing into the heart itself, which mm-hmm. then damages the heart further. Even though all of us in Wisconsin probably have some sort of coronary artery disease because mm-hmm. we eat like Wisconsinites.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Veterans exposed to Agent Orange have a higher susceptibility to it. So they are granting those service connections. And they can run anywhere from the cause of death for the veteran mm-hmm. through to just, you know, yep, 0% is really not bothering you now, but we own it. And if I had a guy the other day is telling you, know, 0% now, 20 years from now, it's like you go in and you crack a cup at the store, you own it.
Yeah, yeah.
Cup may still hold water,
mm-hmm.
but you own it.
You own it.
After you use it and run it through the dishwasher, mm-hmm. for 10 years, that crack opens up and it's no longer. And that's kind of the analogy for if you get a rating today, whether it's 0 or 10, 20, 30, mm-hmm. 40%, whatever, all the way up to 100, doesn't mean that as you get older that won't change.
Right.
Or have, maybe if we're lucky, they figure out some way to treat that and you get better, but then we just don't tell them.
yeah,
my job is only to get you the benefit, not to take the benefit away from you.
Right, right.
So I'll
come back to this a little bit later, but part of what I love about you, what you do in your position, Rock.
Yeah. It's part of what we're described. We'll kind of hit on that. You know, really is we're we work through many organizations, the Legion, VFW, Disabled American Veterans, the Wisconsin Department, and part of their training is, you know, your job is not to lie to the VA,
mm-hmm.
but your job is to only present, you know, if the VA makes an error, it's not my job to point out their error if it hurts the veteran.
Right,
It's my job to point out the error if they miss something and it should be greater.
Right, right.
Should appeal it or whatever, but we're not the narcs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
But we do often advise people, no, our opinion is, and we'll even have them sign a statement that we said, this could go down. It's mm-hmm. not our recommendation that you ask to have this relooked at.
Yeah.
And we read tons of medical records and research studies and all that to try to put, you know, to give an informed
more data
claim and explain it to that veteran who may or may not, and we do this every day,
right,
all day. So back to the PACT Act stuff. There's there's some atomic veteran stuff. They added a couple places that were, they're admitting, yeah, if you were there, you were exposed to radiation. And mostly those are numerous cancers that are caused by that. Unfortunately, one of the big locations, Iwatak Atoll, okay, I'm butchering the spelling. It's an island that we did nuclear tests on.
Yeah.
And then in the Marshall Islands, I believe. And then we went and sent people in the 70s to try to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they put all the sand and contaminated dirt, capped it off. Well, and we had a veteran in the local area who had all sorts of illnesses. And we fought and fought and lost and lost and lost. And he passed away last year before this act was enacted. I mean, so it's a shame. And he didn't have any surviving family members that were eligible for benefits. So, but it was truly heartbreaking that he didn't get the validation that we as a country owned up to. Yeah, you know, we own this and we screwed. Your life has been the way it is because you are serving us. They also added two nuclear response sites, Thule, Greenland, and Palomares, Spain, which had nuclear weapon accidents, planes went down and whatever. Other than that, of course, anyone that was involved in the radiation testing in Nevada or on some of these ships outside of where they did the tests in the Pacific, they would be could be eligible. And the last on the list right now so far is Camp Lejeune. They've got a presumptive list, which is, this is different than that Camp Lejeune Justice Act, which was part of this. But that's a lawsuit against the federal government, and you need to get an attorney, and it's and you need to be careful on what attorney you get, because everyone, you know, some are ambulance chasers, some are wonderful. You know, as a joke once said, you know, 99% of the bad lawyers ruin it for the 1% that are good.
I've heard that. Got quite a few attorneys on my mom's side. I think I've heard that one from one or two of them.
So be very careful if you go down that road, but we can't really recommend, you know, we don't know, because you have to, one, be able to practice law in wherever Camp Lejeune is, North Carolina or South Carolina. That's one of those. But that is also then, that lawsuit might be the only way for family members or DOD and non-DOD employees. By non-DOD, I mean you could have been working at the Burger King on base.
Right.
And you drank the water and you're exposed. And so that lawsuit is a way of remedy for those people and for family members, children or spouses that lived in base housing and what have you. But I have enough with the VA law. The big book on my desk is about... People can't see it. I'm holding my hands up and measuring. It's about 4 inches thick.
Like about War and Peace we're talking about.
And small print. So what are your questions?
Regarding the PACT Act, Rock, so first off, thank you for that. Thank you for that breakdown. Really appreciate it. I think a lot of us were informed by some things that even if we've read up on the PACT law, we're either new to us or relearned. John Stewart has done some amazing work bringing exposure and bringing attention to burn pits, to a lot of the issues that have come from that. I know that for myself, growing up, my Uncle Tim struggled with many health issues, and we came to find out later that it was because of Agent Orange when he served during Vietnam. My grandfathers, both Marines, and certain health issues with them and through the years. And I'm not alone. Obviously, almost every person out there listening has some connection to a military member if they themselves did not serve. We can get a little personal on this stuff. We can get a little passionate about it. And as I was telling you in our pregame, Rock, part of what I respect and appreciate so much about you is you've got that same passion, that you see the same things we do, but you are able to see a full picture here. and see the complete picture that I and many of us get little tunnel vision on, and we're just rah, 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 and getting angry or whatever, when that doesn't get anything done. We need the clear-headedness. In your opinion, and from your perspective, is the I don't want to ask if the PACT Act is doing enough, but is it doing so much of the work that we need to be done? There's always going to be more that we can do for our veterans.
It laid out things the VA has to do. It has to do some studies. It's got to do report in the Federal Register. And people go, yeah. I read the Federal Register, the veterans portion, not the whole thing, but every morning, Tuesday through Saturday, because it's always published at the end of the day, so Friday nights gets Saturday morning. Every day I look at what the VA is thinking about doing, and the Federal Register's where they publish what the changes and what they publish changes that are going into effect, but they also publish comment areas and things like that. So it keeps me up on what's going on. Are they doing enough? No, but guess what? We can't do enough.
Right.
Not just for veterans, but for everybody.
Right.
Bottom line is, and I was our state legislative chairman, and I've written things to Congress. I've been involved in Senator Cole's interview on a whole nother pension program the VA had. Where he's in there in a hearing reading my statement. Of course, not plagiarize it because but it was him saying it. He didn't say Rock Larson from Wood County, Wisconsin said this. But so you can never do enough, but everything comes with a price tag.
Right.
The bottom line is they have to balance. And it's a fight and it's a struggle, and democracy is about compromise.
Yep.
If somebody had the misfortune of listening to one of my Veterans or Memorial Day speeches the last year and a half or so, I've been doing a lot about the Constitution and everyone has a right to their point of view and compromise is good. And I've told, Representative Duffy when he was in office, and they had the last time they were the debt ceiling and they weren't going to pass the budget and this and that. And I said, hey, we didn't send you to Washington to shut down the government.
Yeah.
And yes, you were elected on your principles, but you govern by compromise.
Right.
So getting all that about, and yes, some people are way on this end and way on that end, but the bottom line is everyone has their right to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a pretty good tax bill I pay, but I can't really complain because I'm paid. My military retirement pay comes out of the federal government. My county pay comes out of, property tax. So I get it.
Yeah,
a lot
of
good's done with that tax money, but it's not, as I often tell people that are coming in looking for stuff, there's not a bag of money in the corner that you just reach in and take what you need, come back tomorrow when you need more.
Yeah.
So it's a balance, and it's a give and take. So, yep, they're doing it, but the PACT Act, what really is neat about it is it sets things up and tells them to collect all this data, then what to do with that data, and, oh, by the way, send us a report every other year or whatever, every year. I don't know. I can't remember. I read the dang thing four times. And it's still new stuff in it. It's a lot of pages, and it's on my desk if you're in my credenza in a stack, and I can almost find it. So if you really want to see a copy, I mean, I've got it. But, no, it's progress.
Yes, and I think that's what we're looking for.
And as I tell veterans and my children, nobody said it was going to be fair.
Right.
We just have to try to work within the system, try to make it more fair. And it is what it is.
The fact that, certainly doing something just to do something isn't what we're looking for here. But we're looking for what the word I think that you use is so perfect for this: progress. And having some perspective with that progress, having some understanding that, as you said, and we all feel, we can always do more, but it's a big world. There's a lot of issues and a lot of different things involving our military, whether it's people serving currently or people who have served. There's a lot of bases to cover here, and having that perspective is going into this. I appreciate the passion of people. I'm sure that our lawmakers appreciate it, too. It's how we figure out what to get done. But you also have to have some perspective with that, too, and understand that we got a lot here to cover. And most of it, we're building the ship as we're sailing on it. Like most things in society right now, that's how it is. We've got to roll with that. We all got to understand we're all on the same page here. And I would like to think the majority of, if not all of us, are on the same page of wanting to take care of our vets and wanting to do right by them.
Right. That is one of the things that's quote unquote nonpartisan.
Yes. We'll see how much it is. But yeah.
You know, there's still, you know, there's some partisanship in there. But, you know, our job is to work within that. You mentioned earlier that, you know, you say that I see both sides, whatever. And I may not agree with both sides, but I see both sides. I understand both sides. I want to get across, veterans, if you're having an issue with any part of the VA, that's where we come in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got special numbers to call. We know people.
Yeah.
And we can get through it, because in the middle of you trying to solve your issue, you're getting excited about your issue.
Yeah.
And we kind of get excited about it, but it's not our issue, and we can take and not get emotional in while we try to get to the solution. Whereas you get frustrated, we get frustrated, but we don't have emotional ownership.
Right.
We just have, let's try to get